I finished the roof.
Oh, you did?
I did.
You didn't fall?
Yesterday. I did not fall.
Oh, good.
It's weird, though, because it took several days to finish, like to finally just wrap it all up and everything. And it doesn't feel like it would be that hard work. You know, it's like roof panels are not that heavy. The trim is real lightweight, flashing type stuff. And at the end of the last couple of days, I have been so sore. Everything about like my back, my like ankles. It's weird. I don't know why my ankles would be sore. My knees are sore. And I was talking to Jenny about it last night. And just like, I don't know why I'm so tired from all this. And she said, well, you were on the roof for several days in a row and on ladders. And you probably just were, you know, tensed up and aware of holding extra things and making sure that you're
so many muscles in action that you're not even aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what it was.
But it's like rock climbing, basically. Everything's in action.
And man, that steel roofing is slick. Even when it's not wet, it is very slippery. So it was just constantly working against.
Did you peel the plastic off?
Slide down it. Yeah, it only had plastic on the like on the ridge, the little seam part of standing seam. But even that, I mean, that would have been slick as well. But regardless, it's done. And I can definitively say I don't like doing roofing.
It's not for everybody. I don't like doing it at all. I've never actually even done it. I've always hired people. I don't like being that high.
Yeah. I mean, luckily I'm not that high on this thing, but
high enough to get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just, I don't know. I got used to the material a little bit more as I was going along. So it got easier to, you know, to be able to snip things and bend things the way that I meant for them to go and stuff. But it's very fiddly. It just feels, you know, it's like everything with building. The further you get in the process, the more it matters how things look. So the more it matters how you do on the finish. And just in contrast to like, I need to frame a wall. Doesn't matter if it's perfect, just needs to stay together. You just like slam it together and stick it up and you got a wall. That's cool. And then you get to the things that actually people are going to see, the outside shell of something, and it matters how the overlaps work and how the gaps are and all of, you know. So not a big fan, but I'm glad it's over with. And it's really cool to stand back now and look at the thing. Like, it's got a black metal roof on it. That part is done. And now I'm on Christmas break. So, well, almost. Tomorrow I'll be on Christmas break.
Well, congrats. It is quite the accomplishment.
Thank you.
You did the work of, if a contractor came in and did it, there would be multiple people specialized in multiple jobs doing this thing.
Yeah,
also,
they
would have been done in 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Instead of several weeks that it took me to fight weather and, you know, and the other irony is that I was out there doing this in the last couple of days. I tried to wait until it got to 20 degrees. I tried to wait in the day until it got above, you know, like 19. And so I was out there doing this work in that kind of weather. And I've seen people do roofing in much worse weather, for the record. But today, it's going to be in the 50s. And tomorrow, it's going
to
be in the
60s. This week, yeah.
And it's going to, like, Christmas Day here is going to be like 70 degrees. So I could have just waited. But anyway, I've been fighting the weather and deliveries and stuff for a couple of weeks now. So I'm just really glad to have it over with. But anyway.
It's been severely cold where I am. I don't know, Dave, how cold it's been where you are. You're in the same band, but it's been severely cold here.
I'm working on this slatted wall railing for the rental, and I bought a inflatable paint booth, and so I could.
Cool, so you got a bouncy house in your kitchen.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell this part of the story, but I sent you the photo, so I might as well. My brother was like, and I got this inflatable paint booth so we could work outside because it was -7 wind chill. It was like 7 degrees outside.
That's right.
And I thought, well, I can get this. I could use this in the future for various things, but I can throw a heater in there. I can throw the miter saw in there and we can work outside. Right next to the door of the house. And my brother came up with the idea, what if we inflated it inside to hold all the dust in. And I was like, I think it's big enough. We measured the living room and we inflated it in the house, and it took up the entire living room. And I was like, yeah, this is probably not the best idea. Let's take it outside. So we took it outside. And that day we stuck a little, like a one of those metal radiator heater type things. We stuck one of those in there, stuck the miter saw in there, and it was a nice little place to work. And so the following day, I was by myself. I set up the inflatable booth to actually finish it, because I was going to spray lacquer on this thing. And it was insanely windy. It was blowing the bouncy castle over. It knocked over one of the slatted wall pieces. It punctured a hole in the thing. It was -7 winch. It was so bad. It was so frustrating and cold. It worked, but it was just a very frustrating experience. But I do recommend what's that cheap brand? Vivor?
Yeah.
It's from them. It's on Amazon. It was $180. There are smaller ones. There are bigger ones. It works fantastic. It's highly recommended. But yeah, I guess to Jimmy's point, it was freaking cold and miserable. And,
and you're on a lake, right?
Well,
near an open.
Yeah. Near an open lake. Yeah. It's on a channel. So it's on a little water channel that leads to a lake. So, but yeah, it was stupid cold. I could have done this project in October when it was 60, 70 outside, but I waited until the insurance company gave us a deadline of December 31st. It was dumb.
Whoops.
It was super dumb. Also, I hated the project. I really,
really
disliked that project. It came out fantastic. It looks amazing. It was so incredibly frustrating, the whole thing. I went about it the wrong way. And if I could go back, I would do it completely different. But I basically can't build it in place without exposing the joinery for the slats. So you build it off site and then you build it in place. And I accounted for, you know, the top wall maybe not being perfectly level. I accounted for the slanted bottom part, whatever that is called, to not be perfectly straight. But what I didn't account for was the bottom not being on the same plane as the top. You know what I'm saying? So there was a twist. Hmm. And then my boards, the slats were made out of plywood, but the frame was made out of solid sapele. And I never, ever in the history of my woodworking career have I never let boards acclimate to the environment. I always just, I get them from the lumber dealer and I just get started working. And usually that works out. It always works out fine, because when you build the thing, everything is just kind of held in place and nothing's going to twist. I took them back to the shop. I planed them down to their proper thickness and then didn't use them for a couple weeks. And then they started to twist. And then I took them to an hour north. And what I should have done from the very beginning is just build the whole thing smaller than the actual opening and then just shimmed it into place. And the whole thing out of plywood. But I don't know. The video will be out probably this weekend, and it was super fresh. It looks so easy. When you draw it up in Fusion, it's a triangle with vertical slats going through it. It looks so easy, but it ended up being insanely complicated and frustrating, only because I don't know what I'm doing.
That's, yeah, I know that feeling.
Were you happy with the net result, even though it was a difficult
trip? I am happy.
Trip?
It looks really nice, yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Every time you build anything, you know, I always say you go to school in the first one, but anytime you build anything while you're working on it, you realize 50 ways you could have done it better.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you go, well, if I ever do this again, I'll do it better next time.
Yeah. Or if I ever do this again, I'm hiring somebody else.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because I tend to build things that you build and then you put in place. I don't build things that's made to fit into
I hate building things in place. That's when people now, that was all I ever did with Dave Welder years ago. And now anytime somebody says, can you do this or that? I said, I only build things that get dropped off by a moving company. I am no longer going to build things in place. It's too complicated.
It really is. It really complicates the whole process.
I mean, I wouldn't mind doing it for myself, but when it's for somebody else, you got to, something that would take weeks to do for somebody, for yourself, you have to figure out how to do it in an afternoon at somebody's house with a doorman and fake insurance papers and all kinds of stuff.
Shop. Because, so you're not working with tools that you normally work with.
And your car is getting a ticket every hour outside of the street.
I am very privileged, I understand, to have a Festool miter saw. I'm very used to the Festool miter saw. I've been using the Wen miter saw over there. And the Festool has a thing where it doesn't get to full speed instantly. It kind of like ramps up and it's very gentle. The Wen, as soon as you hit that trigger button, the whole thing just is full speed instantly. And the whole table just kind of jerks. It's a very violent, this is not an ad for Wen, obviously, but it's a very violent on procedure with this particular saw. It's kind of scary.
I was thinking about something when you were talking about the twisting and bending and stuff. This is going in a house, so it may not be an issue. But do you think that it's going to change seasonally as well? Like, do you think those pieces will continue to move? And the reason I'm thinking about this is because somebody said at some point while I was putting on the roof, make sure you only do it in blank part of the year. And I can't remember which part of the year they said.
Yeah. Because you don't want to be one of the extremes. You want to be right in the middle. Yeah.
And so, of course, I put it up when it's like in the teens and 20s, right. You know, so I probably did the wrong thing. But I'm worried a little bit that things are going to be bending out of place and expanding and changing shape and stuff in the summertime. But is that a concern at all for this thing, or because it's in a house, it's going to end up being?
It is a slight concern. It's one of the reasons I wish I would have built the whole thing out of plywood, so I wouldn't have to worry about that at all. So I don't think it's going to twist, and the twist isn't bad. But one of the things is, so the triangular frame is screwed into the frame of the staircase, and it is actual wood. And there are three long screws that hold, that's not the part I'm worried about. The part I'm worried about is where the slats are screwed into the frame. And there are three long screws that hold each slat, actually technically six if you count both sides, that. And so the width of those three screws is about 3.5 inches wide. I looked this up. Mahogany over this, or sapele over the seasons, over 3.5 inches wide, move a tiny amount, a bit. There's a chance. There is a chance that the frame could split in the future. But I don't think, and I didn't explain this in the video, and maybe I could still add this as a voiceover, I don't think it's much to worry about. I actually use really long pocket hole screws. And pocket hole screws and a pocket hole drill, they're not pocket holes. I just use pocket hole drills. But I just use the screws. Yeah, the bit leaves a bigger hole up top. So the top of that screw has a little bit of room to move. And the teeth of that screw is in the... I'm having a hard time explaining what it is.
I think I know what you're saying. Like, yeah. So the part that's the screw is going through to get to the other piece, that part is going to be moving, but there's a gap around the screw for it to move around.
I also use construction adhesive down the middle of the frame. And, you know, when you're working with veneers, you don't worry about veneer moving because the glue is way stronger than the wood. And then the thicker you get, there's a certain point where the wood is then stronger than the glue, and it can break. I have no idea how strong heavy duty Gorilla construction adhesive is, and maybe that'll stop the whole thing from moving. I don't know. But this is a Rule 4 situation, everything is an experiment. If it doesn't work, I know a halfway decent woodworker who can fix it. So I guess we'll know in a year or 6 months if it's going to split.
Jimmy's I'm sure it'll be fine. There'll be like, hey, you want to come check out my rental property? Bring some sapele.
What's going to happen is you'll notice like a little crack and you'll be like, I can live with that. And then that's it. Yeah. In a year from now, you'll see a crack off of one of the screw holes. You'll be like, that's fine.
So we're in the dry season. So that means late spring we'll be in the more wet season. We'll know then if it's going to expand enough. But I don't think so.
That's something I've never cared about in the same way as you, David. Like I just bring wood into the shop, just make the thing and put it. I just like don't know enough about wood movement and maybe care enough about fine woodworking stuff to really spend the time there. And like my job is to kind of move fast. And so that whole idea of being patient with, you know, getting nice woods and letting them acclimate. And now the only time I ever did that was with our hardwood floors that I put in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we spent a ridiculous amount of money on hardwood floors. And it's a really nice floor. And I knew that if I did it wrong, we were going to be living on hardwood floor for the rest of our lives that I didn't like. So, mm-hmm. you know, but we were also in the process of moving. And so we had bigger, you know, we got it delivered. And then we went back to Savannah for a few months and like let it acclimate. Well, then we brought another load of stuff. So it kind of worked out. But I think if I had just had it delivered and I was here, I probably would have started putting it down because that's who I am, you know. And I would have regretted it later. So
you reminded me of a wood movement story. Years and years ago, I got a job to build a table, very specific shaped table with Durham legs, which is these tapered, almost like just a simple square tapered leg to the floor and with a specific color. But the client had lived in a farmhouse in Connecticut and I never met the client. I only worked through a decorator and they said they wanted breadboard ends. They saw it in a picture. So I made this table with breadboard ends to cover the end grain. And the breadboard ends were about an inch and a half with a groove and everything. And I made the table. It was perfect. It was all painted and everything. And they called me in the winter. And they said, there's like these things sticking out of it. I'm like, what? And they sent me a picture. And the breadboard ends don't move, but the 507 planks move. So now the 507 planks got skinnier. And the breadboard ends are sticking out about a quarter of an inch on both sides, on all four corners. And they're like, could you come and cut those off or fix them? And in my mind, I was like, I didn't even think about this. I said, it's just going to keep being a problem. So I said, you know what I'll do? I'll just make the table over. Come, because it was an hour ride into Connecticut or more. I made the whole table over with plywood and they didn't even know the difference. I just put like a quarter inch band of, I didn't even tell them what I did differently. I just brought the table up there and now there's no seams. They didn't even ask. I said, if they ask, I'll have a story. But I made the whole tabletop. I made the whole bottom and everything completely again. And when I went there, I just switched it and they probably don't even know because the client was never around. They probably think I just fixed it.
You're right.
They don't know that I just came and swapped the table. Now the table is actually, I saw the table the other day. It's in the container, shipping container. I've had it all this time. It's been at least 15, 18 years. And I might set it up upstairs with the little breadboard ends that are like hokey pokey sticking out. But anytime anybody ever said from that point on, oh, I want breadboard ends. I was like, no, you don't. No, you don't. I was like, if you live, you know, everybody knows. I mean, I've seen woodworkers online explain it endlessly how it's a problem. It's not a problem. It's just something you got to live with.
Yeah. Is there no solve for that?
No. Well, it's made to allow that expansion.
Yeah. So
I have a cutting board with breadboard ends and part of the year, the ends of it line up perfectly. And part of the year, it's like not a quarter of an inch. It's, you know, it's like a 32nd of an inch, but.
Well, The way I solved that, because another client, a restaurant came to me and they wanted these farmhouse table with breadboard ends. And I was like, okay. And I thought it through and I was like, you know how I'm going to do it this time? And this solved worked for me. You could, so these breadboard farmhouse restaurant, I made five tables for this restaurant in the neighborhood. And each one of them had five planks to make up the width of the table. And I routed everything so everything tongue and groove together, even the boards tongue and groove together. And when I built the table, I just used small air nails. So the breadboard, everything was just literally gently placed together. And then I air nailed each board in place. So each board got nailed in the breadboard in place. So instead of five boards glued together, breathing and expanding, each board in its place would breathe and expand. And I warned the client. I was like, you're going to get little gaps between the boards from time to time.
Yeah.
And I said, they're like, I don't care. They're like, it's a restaurant. The tables are probably not going to outlive, you know, their usefulness because the clients just beat them. And over time, those tables wore out really nicely. And there's little gaps in between, you know, which is kind of, it's a restaurant. So food gets in there, but he didn't care. They were able to keep it clean with a vacuum and everything if it was a problem. So that's how I ended up doing those. So the very ends where the board would stick out was really just, indecipherable. It was either like a 16th of an inch or a little bit 16th in or 16th out. It was not like the other table in Connecticut where it was like almost half inch or half inch. So that was my solve, is to nail each board in place. But now nothing's glued together. You could pick that tabletop up and it would be floppy doppy. But when it's connected to the frame with some sliding rails underneath with some screws for movement.
Anyway, yeah, this is, you know, I don't know any of this stuff. So could you connect the two outer pieces of the table so that the perimeter of the table was rigid and then allow the gaps on the inside pieces to allow those to move within the thing?
That would work too. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that, then your profile would be what you would want and you would just have like you had the little
that
gaps.
That could possibly work. Them. Or you just nail the outside edges, you know, nail and glue like the outside 1 inch. So they stay, and then those boards will only move in and out from the outside to the inside.
The inside of that board could expand
into
the table.
To the inside of the table. Hmm. As long as you left enough room in there for everything. But I learned my lesson that each five individual board moving in its place is less noticeable than all five boards together collectively moving together. Now, there's probably some real genuine woodworkers punching their computer going, that's not how you do it. You got to do it with the peg, with the oblong hole. That's how you're supposed to do it.
I experience wood movement in my projects. I can see it on some projects. Most projects, I don't see it at all. But I have never had a joint fail. And, you know, when you get started in woodworking, you watch videos and you read books, and it's like, that's the first warning is, you know, the joints have to be super strong and secure, and you got to account for wood movement. And even my crappy projects, they're still holding up.
Yeah, I've never had that. And I think it's mostly because the vast majority of the things I've built have been with plywood. But thinking back on the couple of things, like I made a little a side table where the, I don't know what you call it, drop leaf table, where the two leaves like fold up and then they have like a little stand and everything. I'm really proud of that. It's a nice looking table and it's all solid cherry. And that thing has never had any problems as far as like expansion, no failed joints. And then I made a walnut picture frame that was a, I don't know what this is called, but in the corners from the top of the frame, it looks like a miter, but on the back, it's a half lap.
Oh, yeah.
You know what that's called?
Half lap miter.
Is that? Oh, well, I thought it'd be something more clever than that.
Somebody else is yelling at their screen. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that I expected, because I had never seen that before when I did it. I'm like, oh, this seems like a really good idea because you see one thing and it's strong the other way. And then after I did it, I was like, I'm pretty sure this thing's going to explode once it starts, you know, like there's a lot of contact there in that corner with grain direction going opposite ways. And it feels like it's eventually just going to like push itself apart. But, and because it's thick, I mean, the whole frame is almost an inch thick. So I just expected a problem, but I've never had that issue. So anyway, my long-term solution is just use plywood for everything.
Well, it's so much easier to work with too.
This is another, I made, when I was in high school, I made a checkerboard out of solid maple and walnut. This is 40 years ago. And I made it, the teacher never said anything and I didn't know any better. I made the whole thing solid. It was like 1 inch thick and it was great chessboard. Then it was like thick, maybe 20 inches square. And then over time at my mother's house, as I noticed, all of a sudden a crack appeared and it had a border around it. And now it's in two pieces. It fell completely apart and there's gaps in between some of the other squares. And it's sitting in the basement of my mother's house. And every time I see it, I'm like, that was my lesson on wood movement. That was my lesson on wood movement. And since I've made chessboards on YouTube and stuff, and I've always just made small veneers on top of plywood. So just glue in like a 16th or less than an eighth of an inch veneer on top of a 3/4 plywood, and then that's the right way, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say that's a video waiting to happen. Like, you've got a story, like a story from your life. You have the example of what went wrong, and then now you have the opportunity to show like another alternative. Like,
that's a video we should have made 15 years ago.
It's never too late, man.
Yeah, maybe
do it now.
Maybe 10 of 10.
Of course. Well, Jimmy, you didn't tell us what you've been working on. What have you been up to?
I've been being a little bit lazy. I did a video.
I don't believe that at all.
I did a video a couple weeks ago of three. It was for Weaver Leather. It's a video where I made three purses. I've been working a lot behind the scenes, creating and making a lot of leather stuff. You can see on my Instagram. I keep showing it off because it's the season for people to buy gifts at the last minute for their wives and girlfriends. And so I've been making a lot of leather products. So I have a lot of stock and I've been showing that off. But I made that video of me making those three purses a couple weekends ago. And this weekend I skipped the video. And this weekend I probably won't have another video. I have a couple of ideas, but nothing that would be more than a 10 of 10. So I'm not sure I might even do it. I have it in my mind to make a roll up for a set of screwdrivers. Again, that's like a video that I would have made in 2015. That would have gotten 500,000 views in a week, you know, when there was seven of us to watch. Now that there's so many of us to watch, I got to like edit these concepts. But that's a video that I'll probably will eventually make. But some of my bigger video concepts would take more time. So I don't even know if I'm going to have another video out before Christmas. I have a couple things wrong. But besides working on the leather, I've been tooling around on the tow truck restoration, which is really more just a tow truck repair. I'm not really restoring it for any particular, to any particular level of excellence. I'm just fixing stuff and fixing, putting new stuff in the floor. I'm not going to try and make as though it was no evidence of a repair. So I'm not getting that in the weeds with making it perfect, but there's no floor. So I got to build back the ribs and the rocker panels and stuff. And I show that mostly on my Patreon. I'm not really showing that. I don't show any of that really on Instagram. So that's all those day-to-day stories are on my Patreon. So I've been doing that. And nothing. It's too cold to work at the graveyard house. It's just too cold out. So I haven't been doing much over there. I'm just waiting for the weather to break. So that's it. I'm just tooling around at the house, playing around with what we got here.
Cool.
That's it. Nothing. Nothing super exciting coming. I might start working on my go-kart soon because I'm going to try and make this 1920s racer with an electric motor. And I might start doing that over the break. And actually, I talked to some of the fans now, Tips from a Shipwright. He's got a series out right now. He hasn't really broken ground on the wood, but he's been doing a lot of prep work for remaking the Orca, the actual boat from Jaws. He's going to make the Orca, and he invited me to help him. So I'm going to, going into this new year, I'm going to help him build some parts of the Orca. And so between Christmas and New Year's, I might go visit his shop in Rhode Island, just have more of an up-close meeting, see what he's working on in his shop. He's doing the drawings right now to make the mold stations. So that boat, even though it'll be a large boat, it's going to be 13 feet wide by, I think, 40 feet long. Wow. That boat is going to be built on mold, just like my canoe or my rowboat. So it's going to be built the same way, but obviously much larger. So he's in the process of designing the molds, which is going to define the shape of the boat. So I might go see him during Christmas and visit the friends over at Total Boat. They're all in the same neighborhood. So that's I've been just mentally preparing for that. Will I get a video out by the end of the year? Maybe. Maybe. Hmm. It's Wednesday. I still got time to come up with something wacky to put out by Saturday.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
I just got an email from Total Boat while you were talking. They're such nice people.
Yeah, they're the best.
Like, they really are. It was just a lovely little happy holidays.
The best. And then it's funny, Kristen sends me a message and she's like, hey, do you mind if we use this picture for a coupon? I was like, go for it.
Well, I got one in the mail.
You got one in the mail. Really. Yeah. It's funny, when I first opened up my package, I'm like, look, everybody who orders something from Total Book gets their picture. And I opened it up and it was a picture of me on the coupon. It was very nice. Very nice. So that, I mean, that's it. It's been kind of, I've been a little bit, like I said, lazy on the visual side. I'm not lazy in the background.
Yeah.
Just,
I want to be more lazy in the background. I don't know how. And I'm not even joking.
Yeah. Well, but we started talking a little bit before, you know, before we started recording, and I was just telling David that how important margin is. And like, Jimmy, I know that your personality is to like do. And so I don't know how much you rest on a regular basis, but I've found that over the last several years that I had to start prioritizing having some margin in my life to have space to be creative and have space to rest physically and mentally. And making that a priority has been way better for the work part of my life, because it makes that time, it's like stronger, you know, it's like, I'm not half working because I'm so tired and burn out all the time. When I'm working, I'm working. And when I'm resting, I'm resting. And the last video I did was kind of a 3D printing video, but it was about having hobbies. And even trying to force myself to have a hobby that is not about content, that is not about showing it off, that is just having a thing that I get to take care of and I get to do at my own pace, separate and disconnected from business and from productivity, that has been a good forced rest or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I would recommend that to anybody, you know.
I find my pattern lately is I go in spurts, and that spurt might come up at any time. At like midnight, I might all of a sudden get a spurt and then work for an hour and a half in the leather shop on a concept that's just something that's been lingering. But then it's almost like you pick a scab. Like yesterday, I had a pretty chill day. I had to go do some shipping. I had to go send some packages out. And I did a couple of errands, and then I was found myself scrolling in the workshop. And then I was like, you know what? I've scrolled enough. Let me go play on the tow truck. And then all of a sudden, I'm under the tow truck, cutting metal, grinding, ripping things apart, sweeping. Every time you hit the truck, a giant pile of rust falls out from underneath, sweeping the floor. It's in my hair. It's in my eyebrows. So I went from literally doing nothing to doing probably like a full 8 hours worth of work in 2 hours. As far as grinding, I cut out the whole rocker panel out of the car, pulled most of the fender up, like all these things. Like if you asked me an hour earlier, can you foresee into the future 1 hour and you're under the tow truck covered in rust and grime? I'd be like, that's not going to happen. But then all of a sudden, this is how my life is lately. I go from being completely static, hanging out with the cats or the chickens. And then all of a sudden I'm like the top of a ladder on the roof or something stupid like that, or moving a bed. And I like that. It makes life a little unpredictable. I don't mind that at all. And for instance, let me show you guys this stupid thing. My Patreons know what I'm doing here. So this was Monday afternoon. One of my buddy, Adam, who helps me behind the scenes, he has one of his clients is selling a lot of these pry bars because you can't. He says you can't do paid advertisement on knives when it comes to selling products. He says, it's difficult to try and sell a pocket knife with paid advertisement. And this is all stuff he knows more than me. He helps me with my website. And so he's like, come up with a pry bar. One of his clients makes and sells pry bars. He says he does really well with these little pocket everyday carry pry bars. So I came up with this concept. So I laser cut this in plastic. I'm showing it's like a little pry bar with a hand on the end. So I came up with this stupid concept of helping hand. And then, so then I ended up making it out of metal. So this is what I did all day Monday, just goofing around. This is made out of tool steel. I don't love the way this looks, but it's really just more of like a concept. So I plasma cut this and then I laser etched it. Look, the fingers and the details. I showed this on Patreon. I haven't showed it in public yet, but it's still just a work in progress. But I went from not having anything to do to suddenly like doing a whole product development in like 3 hours. And sorry, I have an itch. I'm gonna itch my nose. Itch my nose.
Gross.
So what I'm holding up, if you're not looking at the video, is a little pry bar, but at the end of the pry bar, it's a hand. And then if you notice, the logo is a hexagon. So it's like a hexagon with a finger. And then you got the bottle opener. And then you got a cutter, a push cutter, all these like stupid little excuses for a tool. It's just a little pry bar. It's like the type of thing you'd buy next to a gas station cashier next to your cigarette lighter. Mm.
So. You just reminded me how silly I am. I have a saw stop job site saw at the other house, and I lost the two wrenches for the blade change, and it's just flat pieces of metal. So Amazon didn't have them, so I ordered them direct from Saw Stop, and I realized, looking at the thing you cut out, I have a tool that can cut metal. I could have just made them myself and saved myself 20-some dollars.
Yeah.
Because I already have the sheet metal.
Yeah.
You know, this reminds me of something stupid. So a couple weeks ago, a fan, I don't know if he's listening, but I want to say thank you. He invited me to come look at his father's abandoned workshop. His dad passed away a long time ago. It's a property here. He doesn't even live in the state. So he's got to make do with what's in this workshop. So he invited me over. It's in upstate New York. I went and looked, and I ended up, I looked around. I'm like, I have everything. I don't really need anything. I was like, you know what I need? I need a job site saw for the graveyard house. So I ended up buying a unisaw from him. $500. It's a Delta unisaw. It's like perfectly good saw, probably brand new and like probably 91, 92. Perfectly good saw. And I was like, all right. So we made a deal. I Venmo'd him the money, and me and his kids were there. They helped me take it apart and load it in the truck, very heavy. And I brought it over to the graveyard house. I flippity-dooed it out of the truck into the house all by myself. This thing weighs hundreds of pounds. I flippity-dooed it up into where it is. I got it all set up, the table, the Bessemer fence and everything. And then Patrick came the next day, and we were able to set a plug up for it. And then I turned it on. I was like, I am scared of this thing. This is how I cut my finger off.
Oh.
This is not a saw stop. And it's the first time in like 10 years that I'm at one of these saws that I know can legitimately cut my fingers off if I'm not careful. And it's got major kickback, and it's got no riving knife, and it's got a bad insert that the previous owner made for a dado stack. And I'm just looking at this thing. I'm like, I have to remember to be extremely careful around this thing. This is like having like training a tiger now. It's like training a tiger that used to belong to somebody else, so you don't know his personality. So that just reminded me. And I need wrenches, which is the whole reason I brought this up. Oh. I don't have the wrenches because it didn't come. They were probably, I don't even think about it. We just flipped it into the truck, and then I left. And I was like, oh, I didn't even ask if there were wrenches. So I got to get a set of wrenches for a Delta saw. But
you
I did
make
go
your
online.
Own. David just said that.
I know. I got it. But you guys are fancy with the laser cutter. I have a plasma cutter. It leaves a rough hole.
Oh, wow.
If you notice on this pry bar that I made, I put the holes. Look at the holes. They're like totally not even. On one side, they look good. The other side, they look horrible. They're not even any size. I just made it the graphic. But I went online right away, and I bought a riving knife for the Delta, and I bought some zero plate inserts. So, and I also bought a new blade. So when I go back over there, when the weather breaks, I'm going to go and set the saw up a little bit more safely. But when I was a kid, I had a table saw with no riving knife forever. And I never even knew what the point of a riving knife was until later in life. And now I won't even turn on a saw that doesn't have a riving knife in the back of it.
Yeah.
No. Just super dangerous without
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Be careful.
That's a whole other topic.
One out of every 20 projects, I'm running a board through the table saw, and it just wants to pinch on the back end. And like, man, if that riving knife is right there, if it wasn't there, it'd be going right in my face.
Yeah. So.
Well, be careful with that.
This episode has ADHD. So. We keep jumping from topic to topic.
And we haven't even gotten to the thing we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
What was it? I forgot.
It was next year. Like, what do you have? Oh, we've done this every year for the past 25 years that we've been doing this podcast. You know, ending up the year, we're not going to record for the rest of the month. So, you know, next year, what do you have planned? What are you hoping to try or to get to, or like, what's a priority?
Well,
what's different about next year?
I'm going to be working on the boat with Tips from a Shipwright, a real boat. He's going to be running the show. I'm going to be helping him, but there's going to be a few of us. He's got a couple of different disciplines and parts of this boat that are assigned to different people. And I'm going to be working on the bridge and the house, which is the cabin on top of the deck, and then the bridge above it. So that's, I'll be working on that. That's going to obviously take some time. That's more than one video. and I'll be shown, I don't know if I'm going to be doing a video on it, but I don't know where and how it, like, the video will begin and end, since it's going to be a real long-term project. I really got to make, I'm at a point now with the Graveyard House where I have to really just step back and be like, okay, this is the new beginning, because all the foundation work and everything is basically done. So now this is the new beginning of the next phase. And I really have to delineate. All the floors have been replaced. The foundation's been replaced in the various spots. The chimney's done. I came to the actualization, and everyone's going to laugh at me, that I really do need to replace the roof over that section that I saved. I spoke because it's just Mike, the fireman, has really driven the point home. I got a cough. Daddy's like, you spent so much money on this beautiful chimney. He goes, you're going to have this crummy roof with a lump in it, with a dip in it. And he goes, let's just replace the roof. If, you know, well, let's wait till you have the money to do it. So I spoke to some local guys that they actually built the roof on the horse barn. And they're like, yeah, that's no problem for us. We could finish that in a couple of days. Let's just figure it out. So that in the spring, I'm going to put in a roof on that section of the house. So that was a tough pill to swallow, because I wanted to just keep going. And put, so definitely big moves on the Graveyard House. I'm actually on the board. I'm looking on the wall here. Something's reminding me. I'm looking at an image. I'm on the board of directors at the Rhinebeck Aerodrome. So I'll be spending some time this year at the Rhinebeck Aerodrome. It is a place that has antique airplanes, and they do an air show every weekend, weather permitting. So now I'm on the board of directors there. So the couple of meetings that I've been involved in so far, we're trying to figure out how to raise money. My suggestion in the last meeting was, let's buy an antique car for $30,000 and then raffle it off and then try and make money on the raffle. And they like that idea. I was like, I know if we buy a cool antique car, I'm buying a bunch of tickets. So I might not be allowed to, but I'm going to have relatives buy a bunch of tickets. So we were already looking at some cool antique cars to raffle off. And, you know, volunteer fire departments do that all the time. So to raise money, it's like, why can't we do it? They're like, that's actually a good idea. And so I'll be working with the aerodrome going into the spring and summer in some capacity, helping marketing. And then I'm going to make an electric go-kart. I'm going to start my go-kart in the winter. So I'm not trying to start it 1 week before the go-kart event in July. So I'm going to start that probably in January, February. I'm going to be working with, I want to say the name. I just want to make sure I say the name correctly. An electric go-kart company. They make electric scooters. I'm just blanking on the name, but I'm going to find it on Instagram. And he's going to make me the electric drivetrain. And so that's exciting. So I'm going to make this 1920s go-kart, but with an electric motor. So I can have reverse and stuff, and it's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. Exciting and new learning for me. And then working on the tow truck. The tow truck will probably be for the rat rod this year that I'm going to go to in August. So by August, the tow truck will be moving. I'm not too far from it moving at the moment. It's actually, we got new brakes in. We got the new fuel tank in. We just got to run some lines. And then I got to put the floor back in. So that's not too far. So we'll be running and rolling soon. Unlike the Cadillac sat static for months and months and months. We're really close to rolling out of the shop.
Felt so like you were going to say, unlike the Ghia. I don't know why, but I thought like you were just going to take a stab at me there. Sorry.
No, paranoid much.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So, and then anything, and then, you know, obviously more leather work. I've been kind of getting outside of my own boundaries on the leather work, doing some things that I otherwise would have said, nah, I don't want to do that. And so I'm like taking some chances on leather work. Yeah, I don't know. That's it. I don't know. Pottery. I keep saying that every year, but
yeah,
pottery. I got a new deal with a CNC company coming up. So I'm going to be doing one video a month for a CNC company. And that's right now. It's just a verbal agreement, but I'm excited about that. Going back and forth with different laser companies. By the way, I tried laser welding at my friend Mike's house the other night. I did not get the hang of it at all. He kept grabbing it, going, zzz, perfect weld. And I get it, and I'm like stuttering, the lines stutter. And he's like, no. He goes, you're too used to regular welding. I'm like,
you have to let
know.
It do the work.
And he's like, just let it do the work. I'm like, I don't know when to let go. Like, I'm like pushing, it's going, stutter. We did it. I tried like 25 times. I couldn't do what he did in 3 seconds. And then even Rachel was there with us. Rachel got on the welder and she did a bead.
She doesn't have to unlearn anything. You have to unlearn. Yeah.
That's what Mike kept saying to me. I was with Mike Dubno. Jocko did a video on Mike, the millionaire maker. That's Jocko's video. So I was at Mike's house. We had dinner last week in the city. The night I was at the Cooper Hewitt, I sent you guys pictures from the Cooper Hewitt show that Rachel's artist was at. And after we ended up having dinner at Mike's house, and Mike was showing me his laser welder. And after playing with that thing for a few minutes, I'm like, I don't even want a laser welder now. I don't even want one.
I mean, to be honest, the one that I have, I don't really like the welding. I like the cutting. Like, that's where it shines to me. And so, like, my plan is to bring it to my house eventually and just set it up as a CNC and use my MIG and then use the CNC. Mm. Yeah,
because I haven't been able to strike a deal with these. And then there's a new company approaching me, but I don't know. It's just going to cause me problems with Lincoln. So I might just stay away from that whole subject at the moment forever, at least for now.
Yeah, for now. David, what about you? What's next year look like?
Well, I'm working more on myself. I start some therapy in a couple weeks. I really need to just sit down and figure out, like what we talked about earlier, is just allowing more free time, more me time. So I could see myself trying to figure out a new style of a video just to free up some things. I don't know how to make a vlog work in our space. I don't know if that's not going to work, but maybe instead of like just a single project, you see me working on various projects and this is what's going on. But how do I package that? How do I sell that? So I need to, because I really have to figure out how to manage my time better, because I've taken on two big projects. We got this rental that we're working on. I want to make a bunch of projects for, but I don't have to because it is ready to go right now. So I'm going to make sure that that stays fun and creative. And then I have the art show coming up. So the first half of the year is just me prepping for this art show. And some of those will be videos. Some of those won't. There's a potential that you could see a change in video format, and that is because I am trying to figure out more me time. But to continue making what I think is good videos, because I think the videos that I've made over the last year are the best videos that I've ever made. I hope I say that next year and the following year after that. I hope I just keep getting better. But the art show is a big, big deal for me. I'm way looking forward to that. And I'm trying not to fall into my usual last second, finish everything up at the last second. So I'm trying to schedule myself a little bit better.
Gotcha. Do you have, I assume you have like a goal for number of pieces or something like that to qualify?
Okay. Very loose. I have... like there's going to be sculpture type things. There's going to be wall hanging type things. There's going to be other types of things. I have kind of broken down and like, oh, I probably need three or four for this category, three or four for this category, and three or four, but no hard goals. I got to make sure that it's fun and not adding to the pressure that I already feel. I just feel way too much pressure now. So I need to work on myself.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Especially if you can recognize it, that's a good goal to have. You know, I think a lot of times people don't recognize how much pressure they put on themselves, and so they don't really know what the problem is. There's just a problem, you know.
There's just a problem.
You can't find it. So that's good. I've been thinking about this a lot, just, you know, trying to wrap up the year and thinking about what I want next year to be. And last week, I think I said I was going to go out and work on the Ghia, and I did, and I went out with no cameras, and I spent a full afternoon, and I got so much done on the bike. I got the whole back apron of the Ghia fit, and I had to, like, take it on and off a whole bunch of times to, like, fit it correctly, but I got the whole thing on, got it welded in place. I got one of the doors that was not closing to close. That's like a big thing, you know, one of the two doors actually works, and which is really cool. But man, getting out there and just with the focus of getting things done and not making a video about it, which I know is not, I can't always do that. But at this point, moving the body work, the metal work ahead in that way felt so good, so productive to just go out and get it done. And I didn't have to think about whether what I was doing was visible or if I was making a story out of it or if it, you know, if I had to do something and cut it off and do it again, it didn't feel like wasted time. It was just part of the work. So it was so good. And it really made me just want to, I can't put a deadline on that car, you know, like I want to have it drivable by the end of next year or anything like that. I think that would be stupid, but it did make me want to prioritize it more. And
it's nice to cut you off. It's nice to see when you make some progress, you get excited and you send us pictures of it. Yeah. Then I know that it's like, it's moving up in the chain of command. It's moving
up.
Yeah. Because
when you're
excited enough to send a picture to the chat, I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's into it again. Where I know you're like, we all go through it. I'm going through it with the house where it's like, you get to a point where you're just like, I don't know what to do now. I feel like I'm exhausted. I don't know. Like I'm running out of money. I'm running out of ideas. And then you're like, oh, I just got to power through this next stage. And then you do it. You're like, oh, now I'm feeling invigorated again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after doing that work and sending that picture, I like stood back and looked at it and the metal work, I'm just trying to think of like tasks, right? How can I finish this task? And the only metal work that is left is the rear bottom, it's not quarter panel, but like the bottom corner. I have the pieces that just need to be cut out and rewelded and that's it. And the metal work is done on the entire car, which feels like it's still so far away that it was actually kind of jarring to stand back and be like, oh, it's like, that's like another afternoon's worth of work and then it can be done. And I got really excited about the fact that I could see the finish line. I mean, you know, not the finish line, but a mile marker. I could see a mile marker right there and like, I can do that. I can get to that thing. And so that was helpful to me. And I think just trying to make smaller mile markers to work towards in the future over this next year, I think is maybe a better way to do it than like, I need to get body work done or I need to get the, you know, big thing done.
Do you worry about or think about there being a gap in the video series of what got done?
Yeah, I did. Because I think, you know, the part of me that likes to document things doesn't want to miss documenting something.
It's about you, not about the audience.
Yeah. But, and then I realized that, yeah, they've seen me do so much metal work that I don't think anybody would even realize if I was showing it all or not showing it all. It's the same work. It's the same, you know, and I've had enough people ask me about when there's a Ghia video coming that I know it's not a big appetite, but people do want to see progress on it. And so if I'm not willing to make a video because I can't show them something new, then I need to just get the something old out of the way so that I have something new to show them. I don't know if I said that well, but I think the benefit of moving on is way bigger than the benefit of documenting every little piece at this point. Mm-hmm. Because I do want to finish it. I don't want it to be a thing that my kids go like, oh, we have two halves of a car that we got to figure out since dad's dead now. You know what I mean? I don't want it to be this thing that never got finished that they have to deal with. That's the truth. Like,
I know
it's horrible, but it's reality. If something were to happen to me now, or I die of natural causes in 30 years, if I didn't finish the car, they still have to deal with it, like one way or another. And that
you go right on Facebook Market, highest bidder has it.
Who wants to buy two halves of a car? It's not like a. Hey, this car runs
believe
pretty
me, there's
well.
There's always
needs
another
a little bit of love
out there. There's another, you know, square body nut. There's always somebody that sees the value.
That's true. Anyway, but I don't want to leave it like that. I don't want it to be a hassle, you know, for them or for anybody else. I want it to be completed. And that is not something I can just worry about later. That's something I have to nibble at now. I have this like little note thing on my desktop that just says nibble gia to remind me to like, I don't have to take giant bites. I just have to go like bother it enough to be done on a regular basis. So anyway, that's a big part of next year is just some sort of consistent nibbling at it to move it along. I've got a bunch of software stuff that I'm working on. I've talked about some of the plugins, put out our first Fusion plugin. Congrats. I've got two more that are almost done. And that, I think they're really cool and like useful for people. These aren't just like, you know, how to draw flowers in Fusion. Like they're useful tools that people that use Fusion all the time will make it faster for them. So I've got two of those that are almost done. They should be out hopefully January, February. And then we have another bigger one that we've been talking about for years. And I'm finally at a point now where I have the confidence in how to do it that I think we should just do it. So that is hopefully next year we'll get that out. I've got another online course that is I'm writing right now that I want to start shooting in January. And I think I talked about that last week. So the software stuff and digital stuff is a big part of being able to continue to do this is getting those things out over the next year. And kind of like you, David, I'm with the content. I'm struggling a little bit with what to do. I haven't really vocalized this, so I don't really know exactly how to say it, but I'm struggling with how to like rectify the, I want to make videos about this stuff, but people don't really want to watch that. people want to watch other things that I see. I understand why they want to watch bigger, grander, more unique, artier kind of things. And that's not me. And so I can't rectify the, I don't want to be fake. I don't want to make things for an audience that's not my audience. I want to make things that I want to make. But it doesn't really do well enough. And it's not going to continue to do any better, I don't think, over time. And I'm not whining about that, not complaining about it. It's just something I'm trying to figure out. So like, what is the thing that I can not pivot towards, but start to work in over the next year that makes, that there's got to be a middle ground between I care about this, I want to make these things because it excites me, and it resonates with somebody. And maybe it's an entirely different audience.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's half of the existing audience. I don't know.
There's got to be this struggle to reinvent. Yeah. Always.
I can tell you that I've been doing this for 11 years, full-time, something like that. And I want to come up with this video format that works for me and the audience and is something that I am passionate about what I do, and I want it to work and I want it to grow. And because I can't find what that magical video format is, it bothers me. Because I've been doing this for so long, all I do is just come up with ideas. I feel like I'm an expert at coming up with ideas. Yeah. Why can't I find this idea? And that bothers me. One of my issues is I'm very unstructured in my work. And this is, I think a lot of creative people are very unstructured, and you just kind of, you do what you do and you do it at the time that it feels right. But I think I need to, and you saw my personal Facebook post yesterday, I need to hire somebody else to help me. And I don't know if it's video editing. I love video editing, but maybe I have to give some of that up. I don't know if it's shop help. I don't know if it's administrative stuff. I don't know what it is, but I do know that I need help. But to get that help, I need to be way more structured in my life. But I think I went off on a weird tangent there, but it does bother me that I don't have this magical idea, because I feel like my business is successful. I'm doing okay. Why can't I push it?
Well, I think one of the things there, I agree with you, that is frustrating. And I think it's partially frustrating because when you come up with ideas for your work, you're coming up with ideas for your own problems. Solutions for your own problems or creative, you know, a desire. You're coming up with a solution to meet that creative desire. So you are both the client and the person coming up with the idea. And so that's what we train ourselves to do. I want to make this thing. I'm going to create a solution to make this thing for me. And then I will be happy that I made this thing for me, right? It's a cool little neat loop that we can do. The audience is a different client. It's thousands and thousands of clients. And so you're trying to, how do I reformat myself and what I love for thousands of clients? It's not the same. It's not the same problem to solve. And that's why it's frustrating. It's frustrating for me because, like, I don't know what I'm not doing in video to make it interesting for those people. I don't know what appetite there is for anything out there. So I don't know how that appetite intersects with what I want. And so it's a really tough, almost unknowable problem to have an audience that you're trying to connect with, appease, if you're not hearing directly from them. We want more of this. We don't want this. It's hard. It is very hard. And I don't know how that's going to play out next year. I mean, obviously I'm not going to make any like giant changes, you know, become a cooking channel or anything like that. I just mean, I want to be able to adjust to find this crossover where I can do the things that I enjoy in a way that I think other people enjoy seeing me do them, but I've got to figure out where the overlap is with enough people to make it sustainable and worthwhile, you know? So that's part of it. Now, one of the things that's been interesting is this whole Pool House video series. Those videos, while not doing like crazy numbers or anything, they've been the best performing videos of mine in a couple of years, pretty consistently. And, you know, if I were to track back, they're not performing well relative to videos from 4 or 5 years ago, but they're still relative to now, mm-hmm. they are doing better. The problem with that is that I can't continue to do large construction projects all the time. Like, that's not sustainable. I don't have a place to build buildings all the time. And so I know that when I do like a 3D printing video, an aquarium video, or some other little thing that is also interesting to me, it's not going to hit the same interest for other people. And that's another problem that I have to figure out is like, what do I do when the building's done? And I know somebody's going to say, A-frame. Yeah. And I'm working on that. Like, I'm planning that. But what do I do when the A-frame's done? I'm not going to build a skyscraper. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to build an apartment building.
You know, I'm having these visions while you're talking. It's just, my brain is putting these together unconsciously. It's me watching you 3D print miniatures in really high-end macro videography of you 3D printing parts of an A-frame or any house and slowly assembling them as if you're building them large scale. The only thing that would take me out of the scale is your fingers. You could imagine 3D printing all of these. Like, you 3D print, say, a 1 foot to 1 inch or 2 inch to 1 foot scale of an A-frame, 3D print all those parts.
Yeah.
Do a series of designing it. You could get 3 or 4 videos out of just literally 3D printing the different parts of that. And then
maybe people don't like 3D printing videos as much as you might think.
No, I know. It's like my leather video. I think my last leather video didn't even break 40,000, which is like the lowest rated video probably in the last 8 years.
But there's a local real woodworker. His name is Chance Stanton. He does have a YouTube channel, but he will take on client projects and he will build. So when he needs to build like a crazy large conference table or dining table or a cabinet, he will build the miniature first. Like, we draw it up in Fusion. He makes a miniature and then shows the client. I'm like, I think I want to make miniatures of things that I will never make, but it would be cool to make a smaller version of that.
It's interesting too, because that idea right there, like if you were to just like make a miniature, a video about making a miniature, it may do all right on your channel, but it may just not hit. But there are other channels that are just about making miniatures, same process, maybe the same end result. And because people know to go to that place for that thing, those videos do super well. Mm-hmm. I didn't do an aquarium video for this reason, but look, I watch a lot of people who keep aquariums and I watch some videos and stuff. And some of these videos, millions and millions of views of somebody setting up an aquarium. Right. So there's an appetite for that.
But it's all that, those, it's all that channel is.
Right. And those people know you go to that channel for this thing, which is fantastic. I think pivots on our content is difficult because of, for that very reason, is like, you know, just because the people come to us, they don't know what they're going to get. And the people that may be interested in whatever we're doing on any given day may just not even know that it exists. And I think that's one of the problems that I'm trying to figure out. It's like, how do I have the freedom to do something interesting to me, something new to me, like miniatures, but get that piece to the people that would actually care about it, not necessarily to the people who watched me last week. This is a dumb example, and you guys are going to laugh at me, but I'm going to show you.
So I like Transformers, right? I was a kid in the 80s,
and this was a Transformer that I never had. This one right here, big guy. He's made of six other Transformers. So, you know, as a hobby, I've been collecting these guys and I put them all together and made this big Transformer. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, this, they're supposed to be construction vehicles. This looks totally unrealistic because they're all neon green. Nobody has a scuff on them. And then I start looking closer. I'm like, the smokestacks aren't even black. Like, there's electronics. This is so, why are, you know? And so then I go, wait, I should do a video about making this look like real things. Paint every bit of it. Scuff it up, make it look like they were actual vehicles that turned into this giant robot, and then make a diorama that they could stand on. It'd be so cool looking, and I would learn how to do, you know, and I get all excited, and I'm like, nobody's going to watch that. Because nobody's going to watch that because last week they were watching me put the roof on a building, which is fair, right? That audience is not this audience. But the question is, how do I do this thing that I'm excited about today and get to that audience that cares about model painting and that type of thing. You don't necessarily,
Bob, you might not want that audience. So let's say your aquarium video all of a sudden just takes off and 2 months from now, it's got 3 million views because the aquarium audience found your video. That is actually not good for your channel. Because
that is my channel, though. That's what my channel is.
Right. But all of, you know, a lot of those people are going to subscribe, and then you're not going to meet their expectations with the next video. So what you need to do is you need to sell the people on Bob, not the project. Hmm. You want people to watch you because they like the way you problem solve.
I'm not good at that. I'm not good at selling me.
You're the product.
You got to get yourself a bunch of junk cars and make a full scale Transformer.
Oh, that would be so cool. That would be so cool.
Make a Carmagia Transformer.
Yeah.
Out of an old.
What I've wanted to do for years is, so ever since we got the farm, because it's just a bunch of woods, I've wanted to build a life size Transformer out there, like it leaned up against a tree. It sat down. I'm tired from the battle. Lean up against a tree and died. And there's just a giant rotting robot in the woods. That would be so cool.
Do it.
But that's so much work.
Do it. Who cares?
It's so much work.
Wow. Hey, guys have done more for less. Do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you those, put this
those
out
guys
there
may not
in the world,
have a
now
family
have
of six to pay. Well, yeah. Yeah. I've told people that before, and they're always like, yes, you should totally do that.
It would be a great problem solve art piece. Go on Facebook Market, find some steel rails and tubing. There's always so much material that's pennies on the dollar. You'll get some junkyard guy he's like, oh, you're going to build a robot? Here, take it all. Mm. Take it all for $100. You know, you'll find the guy that's excited about your project. And then you just got to find junk cars. Just ask the audience, who's got a junk car that you could start? But you also need to get like a backhoe or some sort of piece of heavy equipment.
See, and it's like in the woods, not like there's no road to it. It's just,
no,
have to take apart a car or build a structure and then drag it out into the woods piece by piece and then put it together on my private property where nobody else will ever see it.
That's fine.
So it'll become there are problems with Mecca. It, but But stuff like that, stuff I mean, that's a really cool thing that I would love to do, but like, I don't know, you know, it's a big gamble. And I think that's a lot of this stuff is any of these ideas that we want to pursue, there's a gamble to it, which is part of the
gamble.
The
gamble
is
get rid of the gamble, drop the gamble. You do it because you're passionate about it. You do it. You don't care who's going to see it. And that's when you'll win. You do it because you're psychotically passionate about it. Like these guys that build like this castle in Compton, California, or the guy that builds the, you know, he builds the Coral House in Florida. You know, these stories where you're like, who's that crazy guy? Didn't he have a YouTube channel? He built like a robot in the woods. And now it's like a piece that they the town council is not, they won't, you know, talking like 2060. The town council is trying to decide what to do with the transformer robot in the woods because they're going to build a housing unit around it. They're going to, you know, they can't get rid of it because this crazy guy, Bob, who used to have a YouTube channel, built the transformer model in the woods and now it's become a landmark.
Yeah,
it's not about how many views you get. It's about the legacy.
Well, yeah, it's legacy, but I don't give a crap about my legacy from that perspective. No, I really don't. I don't care.
No, I don't mean like your ego or that I'm an ego, but it's like, you know, we're here to inspire people and we want to inspire people for generations.
But I don't care about what happens with me after I'm gone.
No, I'm saying that's the fantasy of what happens if you don't, you know, if you're not focused on the moment, you know, just.
Right.
Just,
well, but just I care about now.
The passion about the making.
I care now about building a thing that is sustainable for my lifestyle, for the way that I look at my family and that stuff, right? So the gamble, I can't look past the gamble because the long-term, you know, past my life stuff doesn't matter to me from like how I'm remembered or how I'm seen, any of that stuff.
You're more concerned about
day-to-day. The part that matters is like, what can I do right now to be the person I want to be for me, for my family, for the community? And what are the limits of like, when does it become irresponsible to take a swing like that? In regard to all the other stuff. Yes, I would love to go do that in the woods. But for me to spend 6 months of that, of my life doing that and then have it flop and not be able to, and then be out of 6 months of you know,
well, the point I'm making is if you actually
family,
do it,
like, that's a problem.
The point I'm making is if you actually do it, and if we actually do these big grandiose things, it's not a flop because there it is. You had an idea, you had a vision, you did it. If it doesn't monetarily pay off, I don't think it's as important as finishing the task. Personally, I understand I have different priorities than you, but
yeah.
It's funny. I sat down, every once in a while, like my bank will call me and be like, hey, would you like to have a meeting about your bank account? I'm like, I guess so. And so like, I wanted to how to get cash yesterday. So I sat down with the bank manager and they're like, you want a line of credit? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll take a line of credit. You know, I was like, how much you want? I'm like, I don't know, 100 grand. And they're like, all right. So I go, what do I need to, they're like, we could probably do that now. I'm like, okay. So they're asking me a million questions. And I'm just like, and I was like, they're asking me questions. And I go, oh, by the way, I have no kids and I'm not married. They're like, oh, okay, that explains all these weird expenses. Like I live life like a teenager. But so that's why, I mean, I understand that I have much different priorities than you. And by the way, I didn't get approved for that 100,000 yet. I might get approved for it. I got a meeting with them January 2nd. But that would just be a line of, basically like a credit card. If I needed it, it would be there at a lower interest rate. But if you set your sights on doing something that grandiose, especially, you know, I'm like sitting here trying to talk you into this, Bob, as if like I'm trying to sell you a car. But the idea that, you know, it's outside of your comfort zone, it's like everything that people don't expect from you. But if you were able to like set your sights on, even if you made a robot that's 6 feet tall and not 36 feet tall.
Yeah.
You know, that's, it would be the cross between problem solver, artist, and maker. You know, it's like all these like three things. And then on top of it all, the cherry on top is that it's your passion. It's transformers. It's these stories that these robots represent. You know, it's all these things that make up who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's a cool idea. And I mean, it's not something I'm saying I'll never do, but it's hard to prioritize, you know,
looking
at looking at how unknown video as a format is for, or not unknown, unreliable.
Yeah.
As like an income source, how unreliable it is and how inconsistent. It's one of those things that, that would be a big swing. And it's the same thing with like the A-frame. I mean, you know, that's a little less like weird because it's not a robot in the woods. It's a still building. It's a huge
investment of time
and money and all this stuff to build a thing that ultimately would be something that I could sell. I don't think I could sell a dead robot in the woods, but I could probably sell an A-frame if I really needed to. So, you know, there is a difference there, but it's also a big swing. It's also, you know, doing something that I may or may not be able to pull off with money that I don't really have over a long time, you know? So, I mean, there's stuff to
the net result is you can't Airbnb the robot. You can Airbnb the A-frame.
Exactly. Yes. Although if I made the robot big enough,
you might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just anyway.
Picture how many cars it would take. They got 2 cars per leg, like height wise.
Well, if you're doing something this big, but if you're doing like a 1 car robot, yeah, it's not, I mean, you could buy 1 car and get away with it.
Yeah.
Or you could buy, or you could just do it all out of plywood so it would rot eventually and fall back into the earth.
I'm picturing those gnomes. Have you seen like, this guy makes these big gnomes in the wood? I'm picturing
There's a place about 30 miles from here where he has 3 of the giants.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Yeah, like they're awesome. Yeah. Thomas Dambo. Anyway.
A year and a half ago, I started this project, basically an art project, and it was like a hand-cut sign on the scroll saw that said normalize mistakes. So it was cherry pieces glued to a cherry board. And then I set the board, I set that piece outside to just rot in the sun and the winter and the summer to see how it would look in a year. It's still out there. It's all fallen. It's all the pieces have broken and fallen to the ground and some have blown away. I thought it was going to be this super cool thing rotting outside and it just looks like crap. And it's going to go in the fire pit.
I think you need a picture of that video of it going in the fire pit.
Yeah.
There's something very symbolic like about that moment right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Any other thoughts on next year? Anything else y'all want to bring up?
No. I think we all need to take chances.
Is this a 2-part episode?
Yeah. We all need to take chances is really what I think we need. That's what this episode's about. Take more chances. Be more bold.
That's all we've done. That's all we've done for 10 years.
Yeah.
Be more bold.
More bold. Cool. Well, huge thanks to our Patreon supporters who have been supporting us, you know, forever. And the show is possible and we get to do this because of that support. So very, very grateful to everybody over there that supported us from the beginning at for any length of time, for any amount. Thank you all very much. Our top supporters over there that go above and beyond are A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Corey Ward, Matthias Garnell, Michael Menigin, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondeau, Rich at Lowen Design, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, and Works by Solo. But also, people like Andrew Liff. Andrew's been supporting for a very long time. 2019. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Really grateful for everybody over there, and they all get the after show. Which this show is no longer than normal, so we'll also have the after show today. That's available only through Patreon. So you get a patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, then you get a link for the after show. You can put it in your podcast player and listen to it, or you can go over to YouTube and watch it from the link. Yeah, and it's just more of us talking about other stuff after this show, which is why we call it the after show. So huge thanks to everybody over there.
It's
I have an interesting pick this week. You guys got anything you want to recommend?
I was going to recommend, in light of current events, I was going to recommend everybody go watch All in the Family. It's such a poignant, amazing, and it's more timely now than ever show with Rob Reiner, unfortunately, who was killed this week. But the clips of All in the Family get me emotional because it reminds me of my dad. I remember as a kid when All in the Family would come on in real time as the first run episodes and my dad would want to watch them. And I remember me and my brothers were reminiscing about this week, how when my father saw Carol O'Connor in conversation outside of the character, my dad was mad that he wasn't MAGA. Archie Bunker was MAGA before MAGA was MAGA. And my dad would be like, yeah, he's just a liberal. I'm like, he's mad that Archie Bunker isn't who he is in the character.
Oh, man.
I remember my dad complaining, like seeing him on the Carol Burnett show and he'd be like, he's not even who he's supposed to. I'm like, Dad, it's a character. He doesn't even realize. You know, Archie Bunker was MAGA before MAGA was MAGA. And my dad was MAGA before MAGA was MAGA too. So, but it's just some of the clips are just so touching. You know, that show really hits home. And if you're young, if you don't even know what All in the Family is, just go look up the clips on YouTube. About 6 months ago, I went through a deep dive and I just started watching all the clips on YouTube and full episodes on YouTube. And like I said, it's a big part of my childhood because I'm not that age, but it's a fun showing Rachel, who's 15 years younger than me. I'm showing Rachel clips of it. And she kind of vaguely remembers it. She's on the cusp of Gen X and millennial. So she kind of vaguely remembers it, but it's fun watching it with someone who doesn't know it as well as I do. Hmm. So if you don't know All in the Family and Rob Reiner, go watch those clips. Such an amazing, well-written show that, you know, what we're lacking in Hollywood right now is like shows that hit home the way that show did. That's it.
Cool.
So mine is called Meet the World's Largest Instant Camera. So it's a fairly new YouTube channel and it's going to be the story of a 20 by 24 inch Polaroid camera, this vintage Polaroid camera, and they're taking it around the world, which is, it's a huge device.
Yeah.
And they're taking it around the world to shoot photos. And it seems like a really cool project that takes a lot of people to make happen because this thing is stupid big and awkward. And I don't know, just looks like I just discovered it the other day and it looks really cool.
Cool. Awesome. Mine, have you guys seen the channel Engine Easy?
No.
So it used to be called something else and now I can't remember what he used to call it. But anyway, he does engineering videos and they're always like over the top big. I don't know how you invest this much design and time into these videos and do them on a kind of regular basis. Like he did a marble machine recently, but he took the AI generate, or not the AI, but the digitally generated marble machine, like endless loop kind of crazy things, and he started recreating them in the real world and made this system that went through this whole big room with all these different marble run things to connect them all. And it was so much 3D printing and so much design work and problem solving. And he just puts it out at like a regular weekly, bi-weekly video, you know, no big deal. I just made the world's largest, whatever. Anyway, so this latest video, he made a robotic arm that he has the little parts bins on the wall, you know, like the little plastic clear bins where you pull them out and they've got parts in them. He has this huge wall of them. And he made a robotic arm assembly that's, I think he said it was like 19 feet long, that moves across this entire thing and can go in and individually grab one bin and pull it out and take it down to his workbench and place it. And then when he's done, it can pick it up and go put it back in the exact same spot. And then he also has it so that it can go pick up tools on his workbench and move them from place to place.
Oh, I saw the preview for this. I saw it.
Just bonkers. And the thing that's frustrating about it, it's so good. I'm joking. But the thing that's frustrating about it is that he acts like it's no big deal. He's like, yeah, I just made a robot that just has the two and it does the thing and it picks this thing up and it puts it in there. And oh, I had to figure out how to do this. It's so much work and it's so cool, but it's so much work. So anyway, go check it out.
I didn't know who you're talking about at first. I subscribed to this channel and I watched this video, but it was more of like I had this video on in the background while I was doing other things. And yeah, what? Just insane projects. And this one is crazy bonkers.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
My dogs are asking to go outside. So we gotta end the show so I can let them out.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, that's all I got. You guys got anything else?
That's it.
All right. We're taking the next couple of weeks off, so we'll see you all in January. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New
Year.
Happy
holidays, everybody. Love you.
To everybody.
2026. Woo! The year we take chances.
We'll see you then.
Bye. Love you.